whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, oh, oh.
Oh,
yeah. Oh.
Oh.
Oh. The sports O.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The good kind.
We're doing our sports O face.
Sports O, yeah.
You're watching on YouTube. It's.
That's why you got to watch it on YouTube.
It's alarmingly identical to my other O face.
I've never seen you. I've never seen that look on you before. It must be playoff
season.
Brandy
isn't quite used to it yet.
It must be
20
playoff.
Years of marriage. And
she's
it's
like,
alarming.
Wow, I've never seen that before. So we need to have the Chargers and the Texans game going in the room, huh?
Get your sports O face on,
that's
everybody.
It, that's it. That's it. Hey, it's Football Friday. Welcome in. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne. Am I going to be self-indulgent? In the beginning of the show, I will be.
Do
hell
it.
Yeah. Hell yeah,
it's
man.
A good. It can filter over into the your Texans fandom.
Absolutely can.
As your golden domer.
It absolutely can. It was a good night last night, man. Good night last night in the Orange Bowl is what they were.
I was thinking about that this morning. I get so angry these days when somebody's like, yeah, remember in last year's Citrus Bowl? I'm like, no, I don't. Just tell me the matchup. They've lost all meaning to me.
Kind of have. It's as I was watching, if you missed it last night, because the game did run kind of late, Notre Dame beat Penn State 27-24. If you watched the first half of that game and you went to bed, it might surprise you that Notre Dame won.
It was
a
hell of a football game.
It was a good football
game. That was artwork, man, in terms of the back and forth.
Yep.
The mistakes on both sides of the ball, but then the ability to overcome those mistakes. Riley Leonard's ability to, I'd fake his way through the concussion protocol. That Mellon took a thumping. He got hit hard.
He did.
Well, the ground hit him. It was a clean sack and everything, but his head hit the ground hard.
Yeah, it was funny. That was towards the end of the first half, and I can tell you on the group text, the Notre Dame group text with my buddies, some of whom were at the game, at that point in the game, Riley Leonard was not having a good game, and Angeli came in there, the backup, and moved them into field goal. He got, you know, he put them on the scoreboard.
Yeah.
You know, he moved them, so there was a little, as good as Riley Leonard's been this year, and he's not been great, but he's like just so good in situations. Good with his legs on third down. He's the best quarterback in the country in the red zone down inside the five. It just knows for the end zone kind of stuff. And he's decent at throwing the football, but a lot of us were like, man, they ain't doing crap the first half, man.
Yeah.
Maybe Angeli's kind of the changeup that they need. But whatever adjustments they made at halftime, you know, they got the 3 points right before the half. And Marcus Freeman even said that after the game. I love Marcus Freeman. He even said that after the game. They're like, what did you say to the team at halftime? And he said, you know, look, this is a 7-point game, and this does not feel like it should be a 7-point game.
Uh-huh.
You know, they went into the locker room down 10-3. And he's
meaning like, listen, guys, don't even pay attention to this. Not the traditional don't pay attention to the scoreboard when maybe you're up or something, well, but or way down.
Yeah, his implication was like, hey, man, look, this probably should be a more lopsided game.
Yeah, they're taking us to the woodshed. This isn't our brand of football, baby.
But we're right here, and we've got an opportunity, and we get the ball to start the second half.
Yeah.
So let's put a drive together. And they did. They drove right down the field. And I thought I don't think that won the game for Notre Dame, but I think that switched the game. That changed the tone of the game. Like,
yeah.
Penn State had to feel like, man, we've played, at that point, we played, you know, whatever it was, like 34 minutes of football, and we've dominated 30 of them, and it's 10-10 right now.
Yeah.
You know? And you're right, then it went back, and then Notre Dame got that touchdown from Jeremiah Love, that 1 yard run.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing with a gargantuan knee brace on.
Tyler Warren showed up.
Tyler Warren had some big play. You're right. Like, this was.
This is
like,
a, was
this
that the
checked
way?
Out like every box it
yeah.
checked.
Yeah, that was that's a, hopefully it means good things for tonight. After a whole bunch of either lopsided or lackluster games in the playoffs, this delivered.
This delivered.
This is a good argument for a 4-team playoff.
Just to pare it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you get the seeding right, I suppose that's the big thing.
Well, because here's the funny thing about this. Like, these seeds, this is the 5,
yeah.
6, 7, and 8 seeds. So
yeah.
The big narrative had been like, oh, all these teams that got the bye was actually like kind of a penalty in all this. And I'm like, it could just be that the teams that got the bye just weren't as good as the teams they were playing.
Yeah, I don't go for any of that. Year one of the experiment, I've been through way too many cycles of in the NFL. Oh, looks like home field advantage doesn't even matter. And then 5 years later, it's like, you got to get the home field advantage. Yeah. It just, these things ebb and flow. I think that, I mean, it's a, given that game last night, I think it's a good argument for, yeah, okay, yeah, it should have been an expanded playoff field, more than two, more than four.
Yeah.
And given that, I'm not making excuses for teams that are supposed to be the best teams in the land.
Yeah.
Couldn't handle an extra week of rest. Oh, dear. Nah. Yeah.
Well, if this were a four-team playoff, because
yeah.
I think Ohio State's going to win tonight. I think they're going to beat UT. If this were a four-team playoff, there's a good chance that the two teams that would be in the finals, if it's Ohio State and Notre Dame, wouldn't have made the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right,
like, neither
right.
of
no,
them
exactly.
were in the top. Yeah, neither of them were in the top. And I know that's where you're kind of going with that. Like, and I think you can make an argument that these are the two best teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that Notre Dame, since that NIU game that they lost in week two, they've been the best team in college football.
Well, they beat seven. They're 7-0 against ranked opponents this year, which is a Notre Dame record, and it's got to be pretty high up there in a lot of respects.
Yeah, well, especially these days.
Even though they don't play in the SEC. So, but Texas, okay, now I've taken your shade, even though it wasn't direct shade at one Quinn Ewers. And you're just, casually saying, like, you know, Ohio State's going to do what they're going to do.
I think they're going to
win.
Yeah.
I'm picking Ohio State in this game.
Yeah.
But
I'm dismissing Quinn Ewers.
Yeah. Hey, well, and,
you know who else
Texas,
is? UT
Texas
fans.
In general. I know. Well, the matchup, especially. Yeah. It's not just where they rank and how they are as teams. The matchup of the Texas offense and what they do well versus Ohio State and what they do well.
Yeah.
It doesn't bode well for the Texas
offense. No. Especially if Ryan Day, it's like in the playoff, he's finally figured out, oh yeah, I got all these wide receivers that are going to be top 10 picks in the NFL. Just throw the ball to these guys.
Yeah.
I mean,
don't overthink it, Ryan Day.
Yeah. So that was fun last night. I'm dragging a little bit today just because as I do, I know a lot of people do this, after your team wins a big game like that, it gets all of the shine on ESPN and Sports Center.
Yeah,
like
you can't just go right to bed.
I was up
can't
till
come
like
down from that high.
12:15 watching. And
it's like you're on three mini fins.
I waited forever. Like they're like, you know, there was the Marcus Freeman press conference, and he did the interview on the field on the dais there when they're accepting the big bowl of oranges for the trophy. And forever on Sports Center, Scott Van Pelt's like, and we're gonna get Marcus Freeman live one on one here. And I don't know what it took, but like it got to a point where like Van Pelt's joking about it. Like after like the fourth commercial, he's like, "Well, I think we're gonna get Marcus Freeman here." And they actually extended SportsCenter just to wait to get Marcus Freeman on there.
I wonder if Marcus Freeman is like one of those ultimate examples of that indefinable it factor,
huge.
Leader of men, haver of it, all of that stuff. Credit Battle Red Blog for that. I love that saying, leader of men. Haver of it
is the best, yeah.
And Marcus Freeman has all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe, you know what, is kind of detached from all of our tetherings and everything as we are in college football right now, where it feels like it's the Wild West with the transfer portal and NIL. I wonder if maybe at the very least some of it swings back towards, all right, the guys who can lead young men, get them to stay at their school, entice others to come there. There's a big element to that.
Huge.
Because you're only retaining guys, aside from just being able to retain good players, actually being able to have guys in your system and in your scheme for multiple years becomes a much bigger advantage.
Huge advantage.
Yeah, just having some kind of consistency. It's that's a big deal.
Yep.
Good for him.
Could you believe the person I was most impressed with last night in that game? Mitch Jeter's old man.
Yeah, calm, cool, collected.
The kicker for Notre Dame, Mitch Jeter, who's not had a good season. He was dealing
he's
with
banged
a,
up. Yeah,
he's dealing with a groin injury for most of the year, but he's been great in the playoff. I think all of his field goals so far, at least in the last two games, have all been more than 40 yards.
Yeah.
Which in college is like kicking for more than 50. Like college kickers are
it's like the passing game in high school sometimes.
Yes. But if you missed it, Mitch Jeter's dad had his phone out filming, which, you know, his son's about to kick the most important field goal of his career. And they flash back over to him after the ball goes through the – they flash to him before the kick, and he's got his phone out and he's ready to go. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, this dude is calm. And then
that could have been a machine gunner. He's just like, I don't care how many are running at me.
He's a sniper. He's a chiropractor.
Oh, it was a good advertisement for the chiropractor.
Big time.
I was reading it this morning.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah. He got it. Jeter got his bones all right.
Yeah, that's right. And Jeter kicks a field goal, and they flash back over to him, and he's still standing there with the phone.
Yeah.
Now, he, after about 2 seconds, puts the phone in his pocket and then leaps into the arms of people behind him going crazy. But, man, the just the even keeledness to stay and film that thing, man.
I feel like Kaimi Fairbairn's wired that way, too. Yeah. That's just, you know, kickers, you want them to be that cold-blooded.
Are his parents wired that way?
I'm guessing.
Gotta be.
But as of, like, the missed extra points are kind of freaking me out.
And
the kicks out of pounds and everything. I don't feel nearly as solid about, rock solid about Kaimi Fairbairn as I did in the first part of the season.
No, it's definitely not week 1-5 Kaimi. So Notre Dame wins last night. So let's we'll talk about that
pivot
again later in the show. Texas and Ohio State tonight. Okay, so it's football Friday. Excitement level for tomorrow right now. So
it's grown by leaps and bounds. I'm excited about this game.
Yeah.
I don't feel great about the Texans pulling it off, but the achievability of pulling it off, I have 100% objectively and without bias deluded myself into thinking they've got a much better chance than the odds makers
say. I knew you would.
Say,
you're good at doing that.
It's the NFL. I can do that with almost any game ever. You know, there's every
That's
single
what makes
team.
It fun.
Right. Every single that we see it in the NFL all the time. It's just the double digit underdog upsets, and because every team's got players on their team that can do it. So, I mean, the avenue by which the Texans would pull it off, I feel like Texans fans who pay attention are probably 90% unanimously in agreement. Okay, it's going to take turnovers on defense, and it's going to take big hero ball from Nico Collins and Joe Mixon.
Right.
And then maybe any other little thing you get added in is a bonus in that. But we know what the blueprint is for this specific Texans team. It's just a matter of, all right, man, you got to pull it off. You got to deliver.
I think a winning box score from C.J. Stroud probably looks something like 210 yards passing, no interceptions.
Yeah.
And then maybe a touchdown or whatever, you know, like a touchdown or two. Like, I don't think the pathway to the game has to be C.J. Stroud throwing for 330 yards in this game. You know what I mean? I think this is a really good matchup for the Texans defense.
You know, the thing about the Chargers defense is that they play bend, don't break, and sometimes that gets a dirty connotation to it. The teams that are good at it, it's fine to be bend but don't break.
Yes.
They'll let up the easy yardage, but that makes the offense methodically march their way down the field, and then the offense has to deliver in the red zone. And that's the huge challenge. I mean, we can talk about the passing game and run game elements to it, but the Texans just have not been good in the red zone, and the Chargers are one of the best red zone defenses in the league. So ultimately, really what it boils down to is, can they be a better running team in the red zone than they have been for the entire season?
Yeah, you're right.
Like, you got to be able to. Bobby Slowick said in his press conference the other day, he's like, you can't have negative run plays in the red zone.
No,
you can't. It's bad enough when you knock yourself to second and 12 in the middle of the field, but down in the red zone, it screws everything
especially
up.
In the deep red zone. You get inside that five, and so many times this year they get inside the five, they get a false start, and now they're at the 10.
Yeah.
You know, like stuff like that.
Yeah, it was like a couple weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, it was CJ in Kansas City that was making the mistakes in the red zone. You got to clean all of that up. So I think they can do that, but the other side of it too is, even as good as that first drive was against the Titans, they couldn't run the ball down in the red zone, you know. And they did once, but Joe Mixon had to bounce it outside.
You got to move people.
Yeah.
They got to move
people down there. It's tough.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. It's a football Friday. Let's get going. Six-pack. Six storylines, people, trends, things going on with this game that are going to matter tomorrow. Game is tomorrow, people. And if I sound annoying bringing that up, it's only because I'm reminding myself. So
In the last 7 years that I have to worry about you not showing up to the pregame.
It's true. Yeah, 12:30 tomorrow on Sports Radio 610, Texans Countdown. We do the six-pack next.